will be distributed to all the registered people. So I think that we will go. Yeah, we will go. Okay. Thank you. Please, could you? The first one is. Could you come? So we will continue this morning session with a second sub-session, and we will now focus all the presentation on wetlands and I would say extensive type treatment systems. So the first. You have to launch first.
Good morning, everybody. First of all, I would like to acknowledge and thank AFID and ICID for giving me this opportunity to present our research findings in front of such a global audience. The research findings I'm presenting here is the result of a teamwork, that is Team IDC or ICRISA Development Center. First of all, I would like to highlight the impact of climate change and how it is interrelated with peri-urban agriculture and consequent wastewater pollution. As you can see, as a result of climate change, the traditional agricultural practices in India in rural locations are more and more becoming unviable because of an erratic rainfall schedule and more input cost, which is triggering a migration of rural population to the urban periphery, leading to peri-urban settlements. These peri-urban settlements have generally the surplus wastewater coming from the urban locations. On the this location sumps or wastewater sumps periphery, generally there lies huge lands which are not that much attractive for real estate. This migrant population gets settled there, and in the presence of this wastewater sump lands and wastewater, they trigger the peri-urban agriculture, which has low input cost because of the fertilizer value of the wastewater. And because the proximity of the city market, it has become a smart option in many cities by the local farmers. But raw wastewater irrigation has its implication. Implication as a health risk, both to the farmer as well as the consumer. Also, over a long term, it leads to salt accumulation and toxicity accumulation in the soil, thus degrading the soil quality. Now, it leads to environmental pollution further. In return, it gives climate change. So this full circle is how climate change is leading to peri-urban agriculture and consequent wastewater pollution. Now, we need a sustainable solution because the scale of this is huge. Almost all the major cities of India are surrounded by this peri-urban agriculture, and the population whose livelihood depends on this peri-urban raw wastewater agriculture goes into lakhs. So any kind of radical stop or step is not possible by the policymaker. So we need to take a solution which everybody should be on board and which should be sustainable. Look at this picture. This is a picture from a rural household where people are using raw wastewater to grow leafy vegetables and salad crops. This is an age-old practice, and if you go and put any kind of restrictions, people will not easily understand the scientific logic and the soil degradation because of the lack of education and lack of awareness. For example, we are putting an example of Gujarat because it is a state of one of the highest GDP in India. And you can see the traditional wastewater treatment facility and how it is inadequate. Even in the major cities of Gujarat, the total wastewater generated is not getting treated because of the input cost. And this surplus water is the problem. We are here not talking about the ETP treated water, which is skill intensive as well as energy intensive. In rural population and even the peri-urban area, this electrical intensive, skill intensive wastewater treatment is simply not the viable solution. As you can see, it is 60%. But with the growing awareness, say for the example, a recent directive by the Indian state of Madhya Pradesh, which has stopped all the crops grown on sewage, on raw sewage or raw wastewater and their usage, which has triggered a national debate of an age-old practice. In a scale, 73,000 hectares of peri-urban agriculture in Gujarat is directly related with wastewater irrigation. And 73,000 hectares in India means the livelihood of more than 1 lakh households because of small farm holding practices. To implicate this is a global phenomena and not a localized phenomena, globally, around 20 million hectares land is irrigated either with raw wastewater or partially treated wastewater. That is the statistics of 2000. Now, in order to solve this problem, as I show, there is a circle relation. We cannot directly go by policy side or directly go with high skill intensive, high energy intensive technology. Rather than the approach should be watershed management with greater awareness, taking everybody on the board, both the farmer, producer, and the policymaker. Here is an example of low-cost constructed wetland, how we are putting for treating wastewater, say for a rural household of 100. Presently, this wastewater is directly going to pollute the rivers or canals in the upstream. If we put some kind of treatment through the constructed wetland and use this water for irrigation, it saves the environment as well as the farmer and consumer. This is another setup we have planted in Telangana state of India. This was a rural drainage which we converted into a constructed wetland to provide certain degree of treatment, as well as these are very water scarce area. So agricultural water demand is increasing, and after treatment this constructed wetland, the irrigation quality of the water is better than the raw wastewater. So what is a constructed wetland? It's a human-made wetland which remove pollutants which pass through them. It is a combination of microbial treatment plus phytoremediation plus physical treatment of different gravel and sand layer. The constructed wetland we are using in this study, it has four chambers. In chamber A, we have an inlet tank. There it goes bottom-up flow to the B chamber. In B, we have typha. In C, we have either water lettuce or water hyacinth. Both are floating macrophytes. And in the D chamber, we have the outlet chamber. Say, in terms of cost calculation, we try to get a hold of how much it costs. Say, the construction cost of one time is $12,000 for a 200 household, a rural population covering of around 1,000. The irrigation potential is 0.15 million meter cube for a 10-year period, and it can give irrigation for 4 hectares of land for that period of 10 years. That includes around 20 crop sessions. Now, factors affecting phytoremediation. We need to identify the efficient aquatic plant. That is number one. But this first step can be done in batch studies, in lab-scale studies. But the other three steps, like estimation of plant uptake, optimized harvesting schedule, and investigation of beneficial use of plant biomass, cannot be done in a lab-scale study. The focus of our work was very much not to get findings only on the lab scale, but to implement and get the result on the field scale. We found these three plants grow easily in most of the villages in our country: water hyacinth, water lettuce, and typha. There are ample number of lab scale studies available with these plants, so we went ahead with this in the field scale application. This is the wastewater characteristics we are getting. This is a typical domestic wastewater, comes from the household of the urban colonies. As the highlighted portions, you can see we are measuring the heavy metals. Heavy metals presence is very low, and in some cases, it is below detectable limit. General concerns about wastewater irrigation is, first of all, heavy metal and risk of bioaccumulation. We hear a lot about this from the policymaker side and the general public. There is a risk perception from the pathogen. Over a period of time, salt accumulation is a problem, as there are some case studies published that generally if you treat irrigate a land with raw wastewater, within 6 years it will be enough salinity is there to it become non-viable for agriculture. Clogging is a problem, and excess nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium can lead to runoffs and go for eutrophication of the nearby water bodies. Excess NPK can also give a weed problem because we are releasing the water at the surface of the soil with high NPK. To give an estimation what kind of nitrogen load will be available once it is treated by the constructed wetland. Inlet wastewater, as the wastewater characteristics show, had a nitrogen load of around 60 mg per liter. And post-treatment, we are getting a nitrogen load of around 20 mg per liter, which address around 10 kg per hectare of nitrogen in terms of value. So this can be called not an irrigation, actually a fertigation. Here is the field scale CWs having typha water hyacinth combination and typha water lettuce combination. We saw the performance for a period of 1 year from July 2014 to August 2015, and we have seen over the period of time generally water lettuce tends to perform better. As you can see, inorganic nitrogen, there is not much seasonal variation. For phosphate, water lettuce performs more in the summer. Because we have a very short winter in Hyderabad, generally the winter data is not reflective of the overall year performance. Overall year, phosphate removal is better in water lettuce. Same with sulfate. Sulfate removal is much more than water hyacinth for water lettuce. And COD and TSS, you can see. I would like to mention the COD part. In the winter, we see a less amount of growth of microalgae. As a result, we get a better COD removal. Because even after the treatment, there will be enough NPK. If you store it in an open tank, there will be microalgal growth. As a result, the TSS and COD gets increased in summertime. In terms of coliform removal efficiency, we saw a fair deal of coliform removal from this constructed wetland. The inlet coliform load is very high. It is around 1,300 per 100 ml. We are getting around 81 to 82% removal for these wetlands. We are not finding any Salmonella or Cryptosporidia in the effluent. We have done studies. This is the plant nutrient uptake data, just to check how much which plant is taking. You can see, as the result indicated for water treatment, the sulfur uptake capacity, phosphate upset capacity, as well as sulfur, is much higher in water lettuce than water hyacinth. This is a comparison of yield, how much dry mass we can get, because to get anything valuable product out of this post-treatment of this biomass, we need to get a hold of the yield. Water lettuce generally has a higher yield in both the season compared to water hyacinth. This is an estimation of the fiber in case what we should do with the biomass we get. A higher lignin content generally indicate a lesser composting viability. A biomass which has higher lignin content is not suitable for composting. That's why from this study we found that water lettuce, for example, is not that much good crop, good plant for going for composting. So instead we went for biogas estimation. You can see the bulk of the biogas comes in the 8 days time, and the cumulative biogas production amount, this is for water hyacinth. We found about a composition of the biogas also we studied. The methane and CO2 are the predominant two species. Over that period of 8 to 10 days, we generally get the optimum content of methane into CO2 ratio. As in the previous graph, you can see the bulk of the biogas generation is coming in the 10th day. After that, it is getting a little bit stagnant. This is for water lettuce. Water lettuce, we are getting a little bit more biogas for the same inlet load compared to water hyacinth. And this is for typha. Typha, we are getting a lesser biogas, but you can see the biogas composition is up to 20 days is fairly good compared to CO2 and methane ratio. In conclusion, we found out of this plant, the sulfur uptake for typha and water lettuce is more than the water hyacinth. Overall plant uptake, WL, is higher, both in terms of uptake as well as yield. Water lettuce also, we found a mosquito breeding problem. If you go for field-scale constructed wetland with floating water lettuce is found to be a breeding place for mosquito, which may be a nuisance for the surrounding. Introduction of small fishes, we could eliminate some of this problem. I acknowledge the funding provided by University of Florida, Water for Crop Project, and Department of Biotechnology, Government of India. This work is a field-scale study, and it requires a lot of manpower and a lot of specialization. So I acknowledge the contribution from the entire team. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this interesting overview. Questions, please? Yeah, we have one question with Antonio Lopez over there.
Okay, I guess you can hear me.
Yeah.
Okay. So, listen, thanks for your presentation. That, for me, fits very well about India needs. Because, of course, in India, we cannot propose very, very high-tech technology. But in case you want to use this system, I mean, fito depuration, okay, wetlands, for reusing wastewater.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Because if the plants has a 9 degree of evapotranspiration, you clean the water, but you cannot reuse anything.
Yes.
So I saw that you missed this
evapotranspiration. Yeah, that is correct, sir. Evapotranspiration estimation in the field scale we could not do, but it is an important factor.
Okay.
But you have an idea.
Which one?
You have an idea of the quantity of water which is evaporated.
No, sir. We have an idea of the quantity of water going through inlet and outlet of the wetland, but we have not calculated the evapotranspiration loss as such because it requires some kind of sophisticated sensors, actually, which we found if we implement on the field scale, it becomes too expensive because the agenda was to make it low skill, low cost, and low tech. That's why we have not gone into much detail. Evapotranspiration, yes. From batch scale studies, we can identify the plant species.
Okay. No other questions? So we will skip to the second presentation from
Thank
India
you.
As well. We have three presentations from India this morning.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to my presentation. I am going to talk about a new plant species which we are trying to field test in a constructed wetland for its nitrogen and phosphate uptake removals. First of all, I would like to thank the ICID for providing this platform to showcase my research, and want to thank the entire team, IDC team, which is responsible for all the efforts we have put in. So the outline of my presentation begins with, everybody knows that it's talking about limited freshwater resources and how wastewater can be a valuable resource. Then going to talk about a field-scale study in the ICRISAT campus to treat domestic wastewater and test the new plant species. We'll share with you some of the conclusions and then how are we going to implement these conclusions in the watersheds and the other states of India to design constructed wetlands. So as I said about developing countries like India are facing water scarcity. And by the year 2020, India will be highly short of the freshwater sources. So as you can see from this map, the India is going to be water stressed by 40 to 80%. So what is the other alternative source? As Dr. Avirash talked about, it's the wastewater. The wastewater is an alternate source. But if you look at this, wastewater can be thought of as a perennial source because it's generated in the peri-urban areas, in the cities, and also in the rural villages of India. This is a very typical example of the farmer trying to use the raw wastewater for irrigating crops, but he is highly unaware of the consequences of using the untreated raw water, maybe on his crop health and maybe on the soil health and ultimately on the human health and the animals. So what do we need? We need a low-cost, a low-maintenance system to particularly treat the domestic wastewater which is generated from the peri-urban and the rural areas of India. And constructed wetlands are the option of treating such untreated wastewater. So constructed wetlands, as everybody knows, is a combination of physical, chemical, and the biological processes which remove excessive contaminants. So I am going to talk about a field-scale constructed wetland study which was conducted in the ICRISAT campus. I'm going to share 1 year of the data with you. What we are actually trying to do is to treat the domestic wastewater with different types of vegetation and look at the vegetation which have different types of uptake. We are also, the main objective is to not to remove all the contaminants from the wastewater. Since we are reusing this wastewater for growing crops, where we have a field experiment to demonstrate that. So the objective is not to remove all the contaminants. And the other objective is to find out which kind of plants have which uptake. For example, comparison between water lettuce, water hyacinth, and typha. So if you, for example, if you have a high sulfate water, high sulfate in your wastewater, which plant would be good? And then the major portion is to learn, to take these learnings, whatever we have learned from this field scale study, and then implement in the other states of India where we are designing the constructed wetlands. So this is a typical field scale layout of our constructed wetland. The capacity, the total capacity of this entire wetland is 60 meter cube per day. It is treating, it is getting a domestic wastewater from an urban colony near Hyderabad, India. And each wetland consists of four treatments, and the cross-section here is shown. So basically, the wastewater from the inlet tank is collected in this inlet chamber where we have water lettuce. And then the treated water from the water lettuce section goes bottom of flow where we have a layer gravels of different sizes and the sand layer, and we have a one particular monoculture type of species here. And then the treated water goes top-down flow again, where we have another species, monoculture species, and then it collects here in the outlet chamber, which again has water lettuce. So we are providing a full treatment. This is the cross-section for all the constructed wetlands. And two types of wetlands basically we have here. The number two treatment to number six is we have the subsurface flow, that is a flow through the media. And from 7 to 11, we have surface flow. And we have just installed two controls to test the abiotic removal, just like a physical filtration without plants, as a control. So what all parameters we monitor, this is just a list of them. We have the daily flow monitoring, how much flow goes in the wetland and how much comes out of the wetland. We have nutrient contents, and we have the wastewater analysis done every week. These are some of the parameters we are trying to test in our wastewater, in sand, and in the plant media. So So this is the photograph of our field-scale wetland located in the ICRISAT campus. As I said, I'm going to talk about the new species which we are trying to test, which hasn't been tested so far. This is known as the Agaritum conizoides. Popular name is billy goat weed. It is a kind of an invasive species which has insecticidal and fungicidal properties. But this has not been tried in any of the constructed wetland studies, so we are trying to test this on a field scale to see if it is applicable. This is just a snapshot. I have not shown all the parameters, but just a snapshot of what we are trying to do. As I said, we are not trying, our goal is not to remove all the contaminants because we are trying to reuse the water. So based on these results, our ammonium and nitrate, our subsurface wetlands are better performing. So our average inlet ammonium is 60, our average inlet ammonium is 62, and we still have about 40 to 50% of ammonium removal. So there is still some ammonium in the treated water and the nitrate and the phosphate because our goal is also to reuse for plants. We also measured how much is the nutrient accumulation in the core sand. Typically, we did not see any difference between two types of wetlands, and the accumulation was very low. There wasn't any much accumulation in the coarse sand since it's not a soil but a sand, so you won't expect much accumulation in the sand. This is just a table of how much nutrients are there in the above ground biomass, because we are typically harvesting on a regular basis the nutrients in the above ground biomass. So as you can see, the Agaritum conizoides is 32 grams per kilogram of nitrogen. If you compare, water lettuce is higher, but after that, it's the Agaritum conizoides, which is showing this much nitrogen potential. And with phosphate, we have water lettuce and water hyacinth, which are showing more uptake of phosphate. We also have looked at the fecal coliform in the inlet, which is more than 1,300 per 100 mils, and our outlet data has shown a reduction in the coliform for all the wetlands from constructed wetland 1 to 10. So our fecal coliform is also removed. Besides all the other activities, as I said, we are regularly doing harvesting, and this is a snapshot of how the typha is being harvested. Typha has a fodder value. If you mix typha with other kinds of plant materials, animals are ready to eat it. We have seen that field demonstration. And we have other plants such as hybrid Napier, paragrass, which besides its uptake have also a fodder value. It's sort of like an ecosystem services besides treating water. And we also perform regular cleaning of the inlet pipes, which is very important to maintain a continuous flow in the constructed wetland. So it's regular cleaning of the inlet pipes and the inlet tank, which is also necessary for the maintenance of the constructed wetland. This is just a snapshot of how much nutrients are being removed currently based on a one-year field data. As I said, the nutrient contents in sand is very lower compared to plants. From this, we can summarize that high nitrogen uptake species are our Agaritum, water lettuce, and paragrass. Phosphate is more removed in water lettuce and the water hyacinth, and typha is very good in sulfur. And the fodder value, as I discussed, is mainly besides the uptake, we have three kind of plants which have a good fodder value. And so our goal is whatever we have learned here, we are implementing this constructed wetland for domestic wastewater treatment in many states of India. This is just a snapshot of what we are actually doing. We are going to the field sites, investigating, collecting the wastewater samples, analyzing them, looking at the site topography, looking at how many households we can treat in the rural villages of India, because sanitation, apart from treatment, sanitation is a major problem. Open wastewater nalas are there in India, which you don't find in the developed countries. but that has mosquito breeding and all sorts of problems. So not only we are trying to solve the problem of treating the wastewater in a rural villages, but we are also trying to improve the sanitation part, which is equally important. So this is some constructed wetlands are in the planning stage, some are in the construction phase, and some have been already completed. And we are trying to monitor these wetlands which have been completed for the wastewater, their efficiencies. With this, I want to sincerely thank you for the kind attention, and want to acknowledge the Water for Crops and the Department of Biotechnology and the University of Florida Gainesville for providing funding. And no field study is again completed with without any teamwork. So we have a lot of hydrologists, microbiologists, wastewater treatment members in our team who have equally contributed, and I have presented on their behalf. So want to sincerely thank them for all the efforts everybody has put in for this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this very clear presentation and very interesting, opening the scope to the different type of plants that could be used. Questions, please. I imagine that Antonio Lopez will ask for the same questions as previously. Do you have in these all these plants an idea of the quantity of water which is consumed?
Actually, we really haven't measured the evapotranspiration, but we have a method where in ICRISAT we have a weather station which measures humidity, wind temperature, and everything. So we can use the Penman-Monteith equation if we have the different crop coefficients. So we have to find out what are the crop coefficients for each wetland species, and then based on the weather data and the inflow data of wastewater coming in the wetland, we can have an estimation of the evapotranspiration. But currently, we haven't done it, but we'll do it.
Okay. Where are the microphone, please? Question here.
I'm just wondering, after harvesting the plants, what you are doing with the harvesting plant?
As I said, plants like hybrid Napier, and the paragrass and the typha, they are fodder value for cows. So that harvesting is fed to cow animals, basically, for grazing. And the other part is we are also using that for biogas estimation, as Viraj had talked about. So these are the two main uses. We don't, as he said, there is high lignin, so we don't basically give for composting, but fodder value for animals and the biogas estimation. I think these are the two things which we are doing. And in rural villages, we have animals, so having a fodder value for the plants would be good.
Did you make an analysis for the harvest plan in terms of pathogens and nematoda, or to see the risk, health risk, or the risk for?
We typically, when we harvest, we are analyzing it for NPK, heavy metals. But our wastewater is a domestic wastewater, so we don't have heavy metals in our wastewater. So
not heavy metals, the pathogens like bacteria and.
No, we have not done in the plants, but.
Okay. No more.
I'm curious to thank you for an very interesting presentation. It's good to hear that, as opposed to the Italian case, we've got a very different approach here, where we're looking at where you said the goal isn't to remove all the contaminants because we want to use it for agriculture. So we see two different approaches. But what I had a question regarding the implementation that you mentioned at the end of your presentation. Are they full implementations, or are they pilot sites? Are they experiments, or are they adopted implementations of these constructed wetlands for...
No, actually, when we go, when we want to implement any constructed wetland in the village, there are some assumptions which we go about. For example, this is the Kothapalli village. This was before the, there was construct. So this is just the wastewater along with the rainwater which was coming. So basically, we we base our design on number of households we are treating. And the other assumption is how much water is used by per person in the household. So we take, like, there are average 4 members in the household, and out of whatever water comes in that household, 80% is generated as a wastewater. So that's how we calculate how much flow it's going to be there entering the constructed wetland. So these are, because there are no monitoring gauges in the rural villages to monitor how much flow is there in the in is there. So that's the one of the basic assumptions, and based on that we we design what is the retention time and how we can compute the length, width, and the dimensions of the constructed wetland. So this is how we implement. It's a field scale. We put a field scale wetland in the village, and then we go there and we talk about what are the advantages to the local farmers, because they are using really untreated sewage water for growing crops. So that's how we do it in the villages.
This source of wastewater is a gray water only, or gray mixed by black water?
No, it's not gray water. It's just a domestic wastewater. You're talking of asking about the Ikrisat wetland?
Okay.
It's just a domestic water.
I would like to go back to the, you had a slide where you showed the, was it the E. coli concentrations, and you said there was a good removal, but actually they showed quite high values, like up to 1,000. So I was just wondering what is your criteria for safe use of this water, and I guess it's a health issue for the farmers if they use this water for irrigation subsequently. So could you please comment on that?
Okay, are you, this actually, if you are pointing at this particular constructed wetland, if I go back, here we had no plant. So this was just the treated water from Typha we were analyzing. And plants are basically drivers for a lot of things uptake. So the problem is that we in India we don't really have the standards, like how much they should be how much SAR should be there, how much other parameters should be there. So there are basically no irrigation standards at this moment. So it's difficult to comment on that part.
You mentioned that billy goat weed is an invasive, if I understood correctly. So will that be an obstacle to the utilization of this crop in such wetlands?
It's an invasive weed if you have an agricultural field, and if you are trying to grow some crop, then it affects the yield of the other crop. But in wetland terms, you want a monoculture type of species. We are trying to maintain a monoculture type of species. So invasive is really not the invasive which you are thinking. I should have pronounced that word, but its root secretes kind of a phenolic enzymes which doesn't allow the other plants to grow. But in constructed wetland, it won't be a problem because we are trying to maintain a monoculture species in a one cell. But if you are taking that in agricultural field, then that's a different context.
You have the microphone just in your back.
No. As an European, that I know something about India, okay, this is something that has some value in terms of wastewater treatment. In most part of India, they don't have wastewater treatment plants. So this kind of plant, for sure, is something better than nothing. we don't have to ask some extreme limits, but for sure this is a big advancement for India. So we think in a European style, but the situation over there is something different. I learned too many things working in India, so we have to change our mind, and this is a very good job in sense of small village and so on. There is a master plan at the ministerial level in India that is based on equipping each village with a simple IMOF tank that in Europe is something dated 50 years ago. But if they are able to equip each village with a simple IMOF tank, this will be a great success. So I don't want to defend India, but Suhas, maybe you can do better than me.
but we will, we will have the presentation. And this is a good transition. Please, what is the IMOF tank for those who don't know?
It's just an old.
It's just an?
Self-declaration.
Ah, okay.
And this is the most simple
system that exists. Okay, thank you. So, Suhas, certain. Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation. And we will call for Suhas Wani from ICRISAT and India.
Good morning, and after hearing the two presentations from the same project, what we are looking at now, that how do we take from the science part to the policy part as such. SPW, I see it. Yeah. Fourth one, yeah. Thank you. So in this particular case, after getting the strategic research and identifying the right plans and other things, we have taken this, that how it can be taken as a decentralized wastewater treatment system for safe reuse as rural business model in the country. And as Antonio was indicating that, and the results which some of my colleagues have presented, within the cities, you will find that most of the water which is coming from the domestic wastewater is not treated as such. You find that wherever that water is going, it gets into the dry riverbed, and then that water is used for agriculture without treatment. Some of the STPs are there, but you know that most of the time, if the STP is not functioning to the capacity, then the flow doesn't get stopped as such. And that's what basically one need to take into account, that the wastewater treatment is an issue. And there was a question whether it is a gray water or the black water also is mixed with that. In many of the cases, as you see that, the drainage water and the rainwater, excess rainwater flows, are not separated in the country like India. Same way is the case for the septic tank waters. Most of the houses where the septic tanks are there, the excess water flow from that gets into the normal channel of the wastewater disposal in the system. And that's the way. So definitely the gray and the black water gets mixed, as well as the runoff water also gets mixed with that. And that's the reality of life in the country as such. And as it was indicated that most of the countries, not it's the case of India, but most of the developing countries in Asia and Africa have this problem of wastewater disposal. And already you know that within the cities, if this is the issue, in rural areas, it is something which you cannot imagine then. And as has been shown, if you go into a village, you will find that sometimes the farmers, when they are under water stress situation, and most of the country like India, 2/3 of the country is semi-arid, and then maybe 20% of the country is arid, and then hardly 5 to 6% is subhumid. In that case, water is under constant great demand. And particularly for agriculture, when the peri-urban areas are there, where the lot of market exists for the fruits, vegetables, and other things, then you would not be surprised that people take up the wastewater by pumping in and putting it into their well. And then whenever they need that well water, they will pump it out for using it. So basically, they are diluting the wastewater with the well water and then using it for agriculture purpose as such. So with this sort of things, if we have to look at that, how we can have the treated wastewater by using the constructed wasteland has been shown by my colleagues. We thought that now if we have to take it forward as a policy level with the government departments, then we need to have the proper documentation, as well as it has to be a sustainable model for maintenance purpose as such. And in this case, we have really looked at this particular example, that if we are talking of the material coming from the villages, basically the liquid waste and the solid waste, and then basically separate it out, the degradable and non-degradable, and then use that treated waste for using as a source of water or as a fertilizer through the composting or the biogas, and then the slurry also goes into the fertilizer as well as the energy as such. If we can really put these things together at the village level and make it as a business proposition for the women's self-help groups or the youths in the village, where a group of 5-6 people can manage this particular thing properly, so that the sustainability will be there, the government doesn't have to worry for maintenance and other thing. And from that point of view, we have started using this particular approach for recycling not only the wastewater by treating it to use for agriculture safe use, but also how to convert the remaining material into the compost if there are no heavy metals. If there are heavy metals, then we go for basically making it as a biogas, and so that the slurry which comes can be disposed of separately without getting into the soils as such, where the contamination of the heavy metals can come in. And that's what we thought, that if we have to wastewater treatment reuse in agriculture, it should become an integral part of the integrated water resource management. Because if we are talking of green water and blue water management, at the same time, this is a perennially available source, the gray water, which also can be integrated into the integrated water resource management approach for the agriculture as such. And in that case, basically, we need to take the wastewater treatment and reuse through the business model by involving the community based organizations for wastewater treatment and reuse. Because if you get into a rural area of 500 households in the country like India, in that case, unless the community is involved in the initiative like this, that sustainability will not be there. There will be a lot of complications coming in. People's objecting for the wastewater withdrawal, someone will say that belongs to me, not to you. All those things can come in. And in that case, you need basically the involvement of the community. And that is where we are trying to get that community-based organizations by involving the locally elected organizations to get involved. Because the common lands where we want to construct the wetlands are basically the property of the panchayat or the elected body as such, the administrative unit. And consortium on the wastewater treatment and reuse in agriculture. And in that case, we are following the wetlands, as we have discussed in the earlier two presentations, but basically as a business model where the common property resources are used, that is the land which is available as a common land in the village, that is used for constructing the wetlands. This is operated by the self-help groups or the other community-based organizations, and it should also generate the income by selling the fodder or the other byproducts, whether it is a biogas or the compost or whatever the byproduct might be coming in. For example, as has been indicated, we have started looking at the water coming out from the wastewater treatment and then can be used for the agriculture purpose. A group of farmers who can make use of this water, they have to pay the money to the self-help group because they are getting a continuous supply of water. The vermicomposting and the aerobic composting of the plant material also has been trained, as well as the biogas production for house consumption or also for the electrification of the village are the one which can be used effectively. And this biogas production is in China, what we have looked at it. What we are looking here that the group of women in India, it's a quite big movement where the self-help groups of women are formed. They do the weekly savings of the money, and then the money pulled together is loaned to the members on an interest basis so that they don't have to go to the private money lenders and so on and so forth. And these self-help groups are also undertaking the income-generating activities because they have to be sustainable, and unless there is an income-generating activity, the association doesn't get sustainability. In that case, basically, the income-generating activities are put through the integrated watershed management program for the rural areas like composting, nursery raising, value addition, collective marketing, grading, and all those activities are taken up by this. So this particular activity we are thinking of linking with the women and youth groups to manage the waste water treatment plants. In the villages, there are common degraded lands which are not used for any cultivation at the moment, and they are because there is no water, the land quality is not good. The original purpose was to make the fodder available for the animals in the village, but now that purpose has been lost because of the degradation. And in that case, basically, if we can use these lands for growing the fodder or the flowers, which will not come into the food chain directly as such, basically, it will be able to generate the income. We need to have a win-win proposition for all the stakeholders in the village. And in this case, what we are really looking at it, that first and foremost, the villagers are very happy to look at the clean water coming of the treated plant. That means they are understanding that basically the water is getting cleaned. The second issue is of the health, basically mosquitoes and other things, which also, as well as the bad odor, what it comes from the drainage water, also is addressed. And the third one is the water scarcity addressed for the wastelands where the fodder can be produced or flowers can be produced, and that can generate the income. And by that way, then it becomes a win-win proposition for all the stakeholders in the village. And now we are scaling it up in number of watersheds as a part of integrated water resource management. And that's where we are recycling of the resources and generation of wealth in the rural areas. Now we are putting this as a policy thing to the Government of India, which is implementing the integrated water resource management approach at the country level. A new scheme has been formed, that is the Pradhan Mantri Krishi Sinchai Yojana, in which the irrigation of the agricultural land in an integrated manner has been proposed, and being working on that task force, we are integrating this into the policy guidelines at the country level so that in each village, the wastewater treatment can be taken up, and accordingly, we need to ensure that. The point what we need to take into consideration here is that along with this, we also need to take some precautions. If we make the wastewater treatment plant and accumulate the water into a tank or any other place there, in that case, we have to take care of the security for the human beings as well as for the animals, because children around the village, the moment they look at the water, they would like to go and dive in for swimming and all those things. So we need to protect these areas properly so that there are no untoward accidents occurring in this case, as well as my colleague have already indicated, the mosquito problems in the wetlands need to be tackled properly so that it doesn't become a nuisance for the villagers as such. And at the same time, when we are generating the income, the drawbacks also need to be taken into account and prepare the system suitably. And that's what we are looking at, this particular initiative as a business model, which can create the employment for 3-4 members in the community. Plus, if they start producing the fodder or the flowers, then that becomes the additional income generating activity as well as the employment opportunity for the people. And then the scarcity of water issue also can be addressed in the villages. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this overview again and this perspective in India, which is very interesting. We are closing the loop or trying to close the loop in the logic of a green economy that we are hearing about a lot. Is there any questions? One question? The mic? Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. Go on.
Okay. Please. Good morning. Thank you very much for the presentation. May I ask a little bit of elaboration on the biosolids? I think you mentioned that you compost the solid waste and you reuse it as well.
Yeah. As I was indicating that if the plants are taking up and if we are getting the heavy metals, in that case, it will not be circulated through the composting. It will go into the energy production through the biogas, so that the material which is left behind as a slurry, that will be disposed of separately without getting onto the agricultural fields again, where the heavy metals will be getting into the food chain. And that's the way we are disposing of the solid waste from this one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Second question here.
Thank you for the presentation. I had a question regarding land acquisition in your business model. Is that a problem in India for these kind of...
No, that's what I said. These are the common property resource. In each village in India has a common land which has the access by the whole community. And that land is looked after by the panchayat, that is the elected body of the village. And that land cannot be taken over by anyone. It is a government land, but given to the community for their common use like grazing and other things. And that's where this involvement of the community comes in, that we take the approval from them first, that they will donate this land for this particular purpose, and that's how then it moves forward.
Okay, some more questions. one question. We have had an interesting presentation yesterday about the reuse of grey water. What about avoiding polluting grey water with brown water, or what about separating the different effluents?
Separating grey water and the black water is a big challenge in the place, because as I told that at the moment with the rainwater excess, the drain water also gets into the river bodies or the water bodies in the villages or the cities. Yeah. And you have to have a completely different drainage line for that purpose, which is quite impossible at the moment because of the sheer volume and the investment what will be required and the maintenance as such. Mm-hmm. So in future, it may be possible, but at the moment, we have no choice. And we have to really handle all the three types of water. Even the fresh water, which comes as the runoff from the roads, also gets into the drainage line, which is carrying the gray water or the black water. Mm-hmm. And that's where the issue of mixing up comes in.
Yeah.
We do not have the separate drains for the excess runoff and then the separate for the wastewater as such.
Okay. Okay. Some other questions over there? And another.
Just would like to comment about.
And after Madame.
Some engineering, aspect should be considered when we are looking to separate the gray water and the black water. One of the important aspects that the composition of the black water will be changing. So
certainly,
we need to be sure that the water can be moved easily, transported, if we abstract the gray water, because the gray water has much less suspended matter. If we concentrate, if we separate, it means the suspended matter will be much higher. So the composition will be changed. And we need to know what's the impact on the bumping station, what's the impact of the design criteria and the force mean and the collection system. I'm not against the idea, but I mean there is many engineering aspects before thinking about separation. This idea of separating the gray water and black water could be good for new settlement, new compound, new cities. Mm-hmm. But for the old cities, it's very hard to have two separate cities. I mean, for construction problem and crossing problem and many things.
Yeah. Just one point for those who were not there yesterday, but the idea of our South African colleague, or the presentation, because it is not an idea, it is something which is operated, is to reuse locally, so on the household, the grey water, which was interesting. But of course, you may reach flushing problems after for the network. Please, madame.
Yeah, I just had a question, because you mentioned Coca-Cola and Saab Miller and other large private companies. I was just wondering what role they have played or are playing in your project.
Basically, these are the companies which are providing the CSR money for the integrated water resource management, watershed management. And in that case, basically, the funding comes from them for constructing the wetlands into the rural areas.
Okay.
And that's where we bring in the synergy. For example, water for crops gives us the money to undertake the research as such at the pilot level. But then if we have to take it to the policy level, you need a tipping point to demonstrate the thing that it is feasible to scale it up. Mm-hmm. And that's where then we've integrated that into the watershed management program as such. And by investing the money, then we showed that this is feasible to do it in the village level. And it's not something which is very much demanding the financial resources as such. And that's where then these all partners have come in, because they are supporting the integrated watershed management programs in the rural areas.
Okay. Then thank you very much. So you have heard a lot of reference to a European project whose name is Water for Crops, and we have the convener of this project, which is Antonio Lopez. And he will take 5 minutes just to give you the outlines of the project, and maybe for some of them, some of you, invite you to attend some of the meetings that we will have on Thursday and Friday.
Okay, this presentation was not planned, so I have to invent something now, just rapidly. Let's start saying that in spite of my name, Antonio Lopez, I am Italian. So this make a confusion every time I am abroad. They you are from Spain. No, I am Italian. I am totally Italian. And, let's just start talking about this project whose acronym is Water for Crops. This is a 4 years project. We just finished the third year. When the project started, the color of my hair was black, because we had so much trouble to coordinate this project because of the many partners. Okay, basically we have 22 international European partners and 14 Indian partners. about 40% of the partners are SMEs, and this is good. There are, we have also some, a couple of consultancy company, so it's very well, let's say, organized. I said very well because together with Suhaswani, that was the Indian coordinator, we did the job. So let's see. There is anything else that you can show? Because much more. No, this is just. Okay, only thing is with you. Okay, so the. Okay. No, no, no. There is nothing on the flyers. But anyway, you can also check on the web if you have the chance, just writing water for crops. Anyway, this project has a peculiarity because the idea is to close the loop. Basically, we start from wastewater. It doesn't matter if municipal wastewater or agro-food industry wastewater, with two main goals, to obtain two main goals. From agro-food wastewater, the first thing we want to do is to extract whatever valuable can be extracted. There are many, many materials, chemicals, that can be extracted by agro-food industry wastewater. And as far as wastewater, of course, also the first goal in this case is to reuse, possibly through a couple of chains. One is by high-tech, you see an example this morning, and the second one is by plant-based technology that I believe that in India are the most appropriate. Main question in India, as I told you before, is that they have no fixed standards. So you don't know what is the limit you can push your technology because the flexibility is very high. Anyway, let's see if I can talk without microphone. The project has this kind of structure. We have four pillars. One is a biotechnological wastewater treatment. The second one is improved water use efficiency. The third one is, these two pillars are a mirror in India with the same organization. So I would say that the main goal is safe water for agriculture and reuse wastewater. In terms of saving water for agriculture, we have the WP3 that is based on irrigation, best practice in irrigation and advanced technologies for irrigation. Bruno Molle is a partner in this. And also we have the WP4 that is focused on plants breeding, modifying the genes of the plants in order to be less water demanding. In the first block, we have technology. Technology for recovering materials from agro-food industry and technology for reusing wastewater. All the results go in WP5 and WP6 that are aimed to dissemination, to the involvement of potential stakeholders, farmers, and so on. I don't want to bother you anymore because it's very complex, but I get you catch the meaning of this project. This project get from European side about 6 million of euro. This was the EU contribution. This means that the value of the project is higher, and about half from the Indian side. If you look at the program book, you will see that at page 13, there will be on Thursday and Friday, we will have 2 days dedicated to what we call the annual joint meeting between European and Indian partner, during which we present the results of the project. Of course, this project has to be attended, must be attended by the partners, but if some of you give me a tip, you are invited, okay? Okay. So we have no secret, and if some of you are interested on the topic, we will welcome you. Okay? Thank you very much.
So, thank you very much, Antonio, and apologize for the bad quality of the image there, but this flyer will be on the website. And so several persons asked me for the presentation. They will be available within 1 week on the website, and Caroline, which is over there, will send a circular email to the attendants to give you the instruction for downloading the different presentation. So I think that we now can close the session, and I would like to thank you all for your interesting question, for your attendance, and for the quality of the presentation. We will extract some of the outlines of these presentation to present it tomorrow afternoon in the closing ceremony of the ICID Congress. Thank you very much, and goodbye. Thank you.